This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 266 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
You know, I'm excited.
Are you?
It's a special episode.
Why is it a special episode?
Well, it's a special half price, half the content episode. Fabulous.
Cool. I like it. I like it already.
You haven't got much to say, so I'm only going to charge half as much.
Excellent. Fabulous.
What a great concept.
That is a fantastic concept.
If we start like a crowdsourcing thing, I reckon we could get people to get us down to like a 3-minute podcast. Maybe $10 donated, we knock off 30 seconds of how long we record for. It's not a bad idea, is it?
That's a great idea.
Every week, if we crowdsourced every week.
That's right.
Hello. Marvellous. Before we get on, though, I've got a special send out to say hello to someone.
Okay.
I want to say a very special hello to Milena Pfeiffer.
Hello, Milena.
Hello, Milena.
And why are we saying hello to Milena?
No, that's not what you're supposed to say.
Oh, what am I supposed to say?
Who's Milena Pfeiffer?
Who's Milena Pfeiffer? No Michelle's idea. Sister.
No idea.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Not a clue.
Right.
But she did like our Facebook wall during the week.
Right.
And it's so unusual. Yeah, she liked our last week's episode. It's so unusual that we get a like.
Yeah.
And from someone that isn't Adam Davidson, that or Dave Foggan or, you know, Carl, I mean, our regulars.
Yeah, the usual suspects.
Special moment during the week for me when I saw Milena put a little post up there. Now, it may have been an accident. She may have like dropped a copy on the keyboard or something, hit a button as it went down. I don't know, but, you know, it still made me feel special for just, you know, a little bit of time there during the week.
Excellent. Excellent. So,
I thought a special call out was due.
Fantastic.
How's your week been?
Exciting.
Really?
Yes.
You?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
You?
Yes. Me?
Really? Pray tell how.
Exciting, I mean, for me. Did? Completely boring for everybody else.
You got a new bike.
I have.
Did you?
Yeah.
That is exciting.
It is. I pick it up tomorrow.
Really?
It's Thursday night as we record, and tomorrow morning I'm going to pick it up. So Facebook will be...
Did you go the full 50 cc's like you thought you were going for?
Facebook will be covered with lots of crappy Android photographs taken on my...
No, challenges this weekend. You've got to take one good one of it.
I'm sure I can manage that.
One good photo.
Hmm.
So what'd you end up getting?
It's basically I... narrowed it down to one of four bikes, the Kawasaki 1400 GTR, the Yamaha FJR 1300, the Trophy Triumph SE, and the BMW R1200.
So you went the Kawasaki because they're better for the planet, right?
No, I didn't.
Really?
I went British.
Really?
First
but
time.
But that guy, Kawasaki guy, tells us all the time about the environment.
I was wondering where that was going. Yeah, so, yes, the Trophy Triumph. It's an absolutely beautiful machine. All the bells and whistles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's going to be annoying hearing that going on.
That's
jingle,
right.
Jang, heavy. Jingle, 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 jingle. At least you won't hit any kangaroos or deer.
That's exactly right. Yes.
So. Yeah, that whistle when you drive down the road.
That's
only
right. Isn't
those?
Yes.
They have in Canada a lot. These little things attached to your antenna.
Yeah, they have.
And that makes this hypersonic sound that you can't hear,
yep.
But scares deer.
Yeah.
For about 37 miles from where you're. Why you don't see many deer in Canada anymore?
They've all headed for the hills.
Every car's got one.
But it's you can get them out here for kangaroos as well.
Really?
I have seen them advertised out here, yeah. I don't know how effective they are, but yeah. So, so anyway, there you go. So that's kind of been the excitement throughout my whole week this week.
And did you get a decent trade in your old one?
No, they absolutely slaughtered me. And so we ended up, I was very surprised. It was actually Kath's suggestion. She said, look, just take the money out of the mortgage, go and pay cash for the bike, and when you then sell your existing bike privately.
Makes sense.
When you sell it, whatever you get for it, put it back into the mortgage, and then whatever balance is owing, you pay out over the next 3 or 4 years, which is what I was going to do. So
that sounds perfect, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
What would you do if you didn't have smart wives? Hey,
that's it. That's exactly right. I must admit, I was very surprised when she suggested that. So, but I went with it. You don't absolutely turn it down.
It makes the most sense. Even if you only get $500 more than the trade, and still $500 more than you would have had.
Look, I will be very surprised if I don't get double what the trade-in was offering.
You're going to get like $1,200 then for the whole thing.
Seriously, a $15,000 bike 18 yeah. months ago, and they wanted to give me $3,000 as a trade-in. Like
3 or 4, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
just crazy.
But you've done 12 million miles on it, though.
Well, that's exactly what they said. You know, that's what worked against me was the number of miles on it.
You should just put it on a pedestal and put it in reverse for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Ferris Bueller, yeah. but even the dealer said to me, he said, "Mate, seriously, go sell it privately." He said, "You'll." He said, "Because you've looked after it as well as you have," he said, "you should get seven and a half for it."
So I hope you do.
Anyway. So, yes, there will be an excuse to pull the camera out this weekend.
Excellent. If the weather prevails, it's been pretty wild and woolly down here. I'm not sure what it's been like in your end.
It has been very windy here this week.
We had a storm over our state that the satellite view you'd swear was a cyclone.
Yeah, right.
At the full swirl, the whole thing. It was just, we're having 130 kilometer hour winds. So it was category one, category two cyclone winds as well, and this thing had the same shape. It was really kind of weird.
Wow.
I've never seen a cloud formation like that over our state before.
Yeah, right.
It was a little bit hairy driving along, and everything's flying everywhere, and garbage bins going down the street faster than you can drive.
But Melbourne traditionally is quite windy.
But
probably not as extreme as what you've
had. No, not that high. Not or for that sustained a period. It went for a good sort of 14 hours or so, you know.
What? Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of cool. You had masses of snow, up in the hills, not down low. Right.
I was going to say.
But, so it's been an interesting week weather-wise. I was tempted to go out and take photos.
But thought better of it.
Well, it was cold and windy, wasn't it? It's wet. And if I'd seen some of that cool cloud formation sort of visible, I might have been tempted, but it was just kind of just bland and miserable, so no point. But I did go and take a couple of photos this week.
Oh, yeah.
We photographed another of our D-Day veterans this week.
Cool. How'd it go?
It was yet again another interesting day of incredible stories, another person's amazing journey, completely different to everybody else's.
Right.
This guy would talk about his lead up to the war. He'd talk about his post-war, but he wouldn't go.
Right,
he'd skirt around everything, and I didn't want to push his job. He was in one of the first landing craft to drive onto the beaches. He landed on what was called Juno Beach.
Oh, okay.
So he was driving these guys onto the beach.
Yeah,
he did that twice. He went back to the ship, loaded up again, came back in again. So he did the run twice.
Wow.
And then the rest of his job was to go, and the third time they went in, once all the troops had moved onwards and push the resistance back.
Yeah.
His job was then to go onto the beaches and load up the dead bodies.
Oh, wow.
That's why you won't talk about it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think his words were, and that's a day I'll never remember. So,
right.
And by remember, it means I'm sure he remembers it vividly. Yeah. But he'll never ever talk about it.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting guy. He was just about to turn 90 and never married.
Wow.
He's moved to Australia in the early 1950s, and he's got no family left.
Wow.
Other than a daughter of his older brother. That's the only member of his family, and she's in England.
Yeah.
And all the way through the conversation, I said, I really got the feeling that he regretted coming to Australia.
Oh, really?
He was happy with his choice. He's happy that what he did.
Yeah.
But he missed out on so much. Yeah, I think he thought if he'd stayed there, this is the feeling I got, if he'd stayed there, his life would have been completely different. I reckon he would have married. He would have had a very different life. But once again, an amazing guy.
Yeah. That's funny, you know. I mean, I don't feel like I have really strong connections with my family, but it must be...
Don't say that about your wife and kids, do you?
I don't mean Gath and Max. I'm talking about... but it must be, you know, another step again to move to the other side of the planet where you absolutely have no, you know, relations whatsoever.
It's funny, he said he was working in Harrods in London,
right,
in the early 50s, and he was working the jewellery and it was a porcelain, jewellery and porcelain, and silver, jewellery and silver department.
Right.
And this woman from Australia came in and started talking to him, and she said, oh, have you ever thought about coming to Australia? He goes, oh, no, I've thought about it, but, you know, everyone thought about it in those days, apparently.
Yeah.
And he says, but in those days, you had to be sponsored to come over. You had to have someone, I've got no one in Australia to recommend me. She says, oh, I'll get my boss to do it.
Right.
And so she went, and she worked for a jewellery company in Melbourne, in Australia.
Right.
And so she got back. She got her boss to do a recommendation, and that's how he got into the country.
Wow.
And he came and worked for that country. He worked for that company for the rest of his life.
Wow.
The rest of his working life. And yeah. The company was the company that makes the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And on, it's funny, his lounge room has very few photos. He's got a photo of his mum. It's going to be like, you know, circa 1900, 1890s.
Hang on, sorry. I just want to go back a sec.
Yeah.
Are there multiple Melbourne Cups?
Yeah, well, one for every year, of course.
Is it?
Yeah.
I assumed that it was one cup and that you held it for a year and then you handed it back.
You assume, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it just happened to you, didn't it?
Right, okay. So it is a new one every year.
It's a new one every year.
Right.
And I'm sure they made more than that one thing because it would have been a fairly lowly job just to make that one cup a year. Yeah, wouldn't have matched much staff. But he came to Australia and said, so his lounge room had very few photographs, had some photos of his two brothers, both dead,
mm-hmm.
And a couple of photos of himself when he was a kid with his brothers. Yeah.
Yep.
And this one very large photograph on top of the TV of this woman holding the Melbourne Cup. And it's like a 1960s, early 60s, late 50s photograph.
Wow.
And it was prior to place in the house. So it got me curious straight away, as you'd imagine.
Yeah.
A for the cup, B for the...
size, why, of it.
Who she is, and there's a, yeah, who she is in his place in his life, and yep. he's showing, talking about the photos. And he said, "Oh, and I met this lady the day I came to work in this company,
wow.
And I've just got this feeling straight away that she was the love of his life. He never got
right.
Like, I don't know whether when he met her, she was already married or whatever. But he still sees her today.
Oh wow! Yeah,
50 odd years later. She's had a stroke and she's bedridden.
Right.
And he visits her four times a week.
Wow.
And it's just, oh, the power in that story. There's such an incredible story there that you weren't ever going to get it out of him. But you could sense there's a momentous story around that.
Yeah, right.
And I think the most emotive thing for the day was he was talking about when he came to Australia. And he went by train from where he lived to the docks and then by boat.
Right.
And he said his dad took him down to the docks, down to the train station, and they said their goodbyes, and his dad went off, and he's sitting on the train and realized he'd left something at home. And he ran home to grab it before the train left and ran into the house, and there's his dad crying on the couch.
Oh, wow.
And he'd never seen his dad cry. And this man, as he's saying this, he's tearing up as well, you know. It's still incredibly, you know, 50, 60 years later, still really haunts this man.
I can imagine.
And he got his thing and he went, and that was the last time he saw his dad alive.
Wow.
And his dad died halfway through writing a letter to him.
Oh, wow.
And it just seems like they had an amazing relationship, this father and son. And his father was a sailor before he went in the Navy. And yeah, it was an amazing, once again, yeah, as I said to me and Dave, we're so lucky that we get to spend this time.
Yeah.
And just see other people's experience and understand other people's lives and experiences, even in a very short period, in a little small way.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly, incredibly powerful and very emotive. And so I wrote on my Facebook page yesterday, I said, once again, David and I have been privileged to have the chance to learn something about another person's journey on this planet. Everyone has stories. They are amazing. Take the time to listen to some.
Yeah. Definitely. So
go find someone to listen to their stories a bit. You know,
yep.
And if you have a heart of a photographer, take their photo too.
Yeah.
it's a wondrous thing. So out photographing Thomas, and that was another, and we've got a whole bunch more lined up, and I can't say anything about it now.
Oh, okay.
But if we've been, there's a chance we've been given this opportunity to go photograph this troop of soldiers, Australian soldiers from World War II, that have never been photographed before.
Oh, as a group?
As a group.
Right.
Ever. And no one has access to them.
Right.
And
but they are still alive.
Well, the ones that are still alive are, yeah.
Yeah.
The other ones aren't.
So what, they were like an SAS group or something?
Yeah, they were a specialist troop that said no one's ever had the chance. And they're up in far north Australia.
Wow.
So it's going to be an amazing experience. Should we be able to, and it's looking pretty good. So that's
wow.
Once again, as I said, today when we start on this journey, we don't know where it's going to take us. And now we're also being approached about, well, after we've done this, the D-Day guys, how do we feel about doing Vietnam?
Wow.
So, yeah, this could be a long journey.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, fabulous. Just terrific. Yeah. It's an honour. And so we're looking at, hopefully we'll have an exhibition of the photos we're doing now, both at the Melbourne Shrine and at the Australian War Museum in Canberra, which is looking good. And what I'm hoping to do for the Australian War Museum is have a running slideshow, a video slideshow.
Yep.
With, whilst their images are on screen, some of the clips of the audio we're recording.
Yeah, right.
Telling their stories, so we can hear their stories whilst we see their photos.
Yeah, well, I think I suggested something along those lines.
No, I'm sure that's entirely my idea. No one's ever done that. You could have. I'm glad I took your advice, dude. You're going to be generous of me. I should listen to this podcast. It sounds like there's some good info in here.
Excellent. And certainly, it seems like this project has grown legs far beyond what either of the pair of you imagined at the outset.
Yeah, so I had an idea,
right,
that it could lead to who knows what.
Yeah,
but that wasn't really the intention of doing it. Yeah,
you're just doing it for the experience.
Yeah, I also wanted a body of work that was important.
Yeah.
I wanted to take some photos for once. I wanted to sort of sink my teeth into a project. I think I've been getting bored. There we go. That's probably where it boils down. I've been getting a little bit bored.
Fair enough.
And wanting to have a project that's not just for me.
Yeah.
I can go and do my own personal project, do something that interests me, but yeah, it's just, you know what I'm... But I wanted a project where I could use my skills for somebody else.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty darn cool. And then there's a poor old Dave, and he's been approached that we might be doing some stuff for a church as well, for all their old survivors and stuff. And
oh, okay,
it just goes on and on and on. And it's a journey. I'm happy to let it unfold for as many years as necessary. And
yeah,
and see where it takes us. So to be able to use your skills for something that's, yeah, whilst I love teaching, it's fabulous, and be able to teach people skills to be able to go and take incredible photographs for themselves. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And when you see the photos that they've captured of people that are important to them, that's bloody marvellous.
Sure.
But I need more. I need more. Give me more. And this has been pretty cool. So
excellent.
And then I got inspired this afternoon.
Oh yeah.
And I drew up a photographic cartoon.
Okay.
A photo cartoon that I called it the thinking man's photographic humor.
Right.
I should have probably called it old school photographic humor. And I posted it up on Facebook. I'm going to send you a link to it now.
I missed that one.
Well, yeah, it's probably.
Is it on your wall or on?
Just my personal one. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm going to.
It's all right. Don't send me a link. I
just sent it to you. It's there, dude. It's
photo exhibition.
There you go.
Okay. Minus, plus, and 101010. Okay.
You have to put the link in the notes now, of course.
I will now. Yes.
And what's the guy doing?
Scratching his head.
Exactly. That's good. I wasn't sure if that had come across properly. So he's got fleas. Okay.
So you could go for negative exposure or positive exposure. Is that what the plus and minus?
Get rid of the exposure.
positive and negative.
Yeah.
And the 10 10 10 is binary.
Or? In other words, for binary?
On F, on off. No. Binary, base 2.
It's all digital, dude.
Oh, digital. Oh, okay. So what,
positive, negative, and digital.
Right.
Just with slides. And one
wow. Yeah, negative. Okay. Too highbrow for me.
I told you it was the thinking, man, thinking man's humor. Yeah. I mean, the things that amuse myself.
Funny. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, now you say, now it's explained to you. Yeah. I'm gonna draw a cartoon next, explaining the cartoon. So I said, and so school holidays, tomorrow's the last day of school before school holidays, so I've got to start thinking up some photo projects to take photos of the kiddo during school holidays. And Adam Davidson sent through a link last week.
He did.
Some crazy stuff that some guy's doing with his kid.
Some awesome shots in that portfolio of images, which links will be in the show notes, of course.
So I'm not doing any of those. That part of far too much work involved.
I was going to say, it'd be too much effort for you.
Too much work.
A lot of Photoshop involved in that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And I'm no good at Photoshop, so it's not going to help me at all. I can't do that stuff.
They look like kind of like movie posters.
They do. They do. They're great. Yeah. I've been trying. A lot of the stuff requires the ability to cut stuff out.
Yes.
Paste them so they don't look like they've been cut and pasted. So I did a little bit of a few-minute test of the new Photoshop CC focus mask.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And does it work?
Not for me.
Right.
I just don't got the skills, yeah.
Okay.
I don't have the skills for this automated thing to do itself well for me. Yeah, look, it works reasonably well. But as with anything to do with cutting out, it's the refining it to the very fine detail stuff and not having it look chopped is where I find it hard.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it certainly, if you were reasonably good at masking already,
yep,
this thing's going to save you an awful lot of time.
Right.
And then you'll be able to, you know, tweak it so that you've got your, you know, put your own skill set in for the difficult stuff and bang, I'm sure it'll be a great time saver.
Yeah, right.
So that was pretty good.
Cool.
Hmm.
Yes, I don't have CC, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's only $10 a month.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
One of these days.
Now, this week, yeah. Nikon's announced the new D810.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm not going to go into it.
Right.
Because, yeah, there's a myriad of stuff out there on the internet about it, and it's just another camera. But there's two things I had to bring up. One was that part of their marketing.
Well, the fact that it's got a one in the number, they've just gone and thrown... just caution to the wind.
Well, they've got their 150-100. They've got ones in them.
Oh, yeah, but they don't count.
Yeah, oh, don't say that to all the people that have got them. Like, Sony doesn't count. But,
yeah.
Once again, the marketing.
Okay.
That's my head in a little bit. The main headline, the power to create the compelling.
Right, I don't think the camera gives you that.
Power to create the compelling. Look, if you require the tool to make your photos compelling, you're in some trouble.
That's what I mean. It's not the camera.
Exactly. So I mean, the whole marketing is like, yeah. Really, aren't we past that? Next thing you can tell is how many megapixels it's got. Oh, look at that, 36.3. There you go. That's so important. Oh, it's full frame. Look, that's really important. No, but. And then the other thing that gets me with Nikon and Nikon for our North American listeners is they're talking about they've put the some of the programming in for the D4S, so it's enabled the much higher ISO range.
Right. Right.
And its ISO goes now from 32 to 51,200.
That's pitiful.
Except
Sony A7S goes higher than that.
Exactly, but they don't. Nikon don't even call it 51,200. It's
high two,
and then what was it? Yeah, 20,600 high one,
yeah.
And 32 ISO low one. What? Why confuse things? why does it have to have highs and lows? Call the number what it bloody is.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about ISO sensitivity in a digital system is...
You're not going to get tech on me now.
I am. Is all it is a simple multiplication of the binary values that were taken from the base ISO for the sensor's natural sensitivity. You know, so if it came up with a sensitivity of X at 100 ISO, then when you adjust it to 200 ISO, all it does is take the value from every one of those pixels and multiplies it by 2. And when you go to 400, it multiplies it by 4. So I don't understand why they talk about extended, you know, ISO settings of, you know, high 1 and high 2. Like, it's just another multiplication step.
Just madness.
Yeah.
It's just one more thing to confuse people.
But, yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say to you, you know, because you're having your little whine about the power to create the compelling. What else are they going to do? I mean...
That was not a little whine, dude. That
but that's right. Just marketing. I mean, goes on in every industry. Like, everyone's got to come up with something that helps them sell the next product.
Yeah, I know, but...
Well,
I want to see them come out with the best camera ever made, and then the next one, and this one's even better. This one's even more better.
Yes,
I've seen the ultimate camera. Well, what's this next one? The ultimate in a bit.
Yes,
it's like people do marketing work, but I don't get this. It's like why Canon and Pentax use TV and AV rather than S and A.
What is that all about?
It's not for taking photos of TVs, funnily enough, but audio visual equipment. Right. I knew you got excited as soon as you heard AV. There's one for taking photos of audio. What? aperture value and time value. I mean, photography is not confusing enough.
Yeah.
They have to get with different acronyms for shutter speed priority and aperture priority.
Yeah.
Tell us what the bloody thing does. Shutter speed priority. Oh, okay. So what? You prioritize the shutter speed in this mode. I can almost understand that one. Prioritize the aperture on this one. I see where you're coming from. I get it. Aperture value. What's the value of an aperture? You should be able to tell us that after that 15-minute video. It keeps coming back to that, doesn't it?
Apparently, yes.
You know, I talk about you in my workshops all the time. With that video. All the time.
I know this idiot up north.
I said, you wouldn't believe this knob I will have to astounding. I said, could you imagine? And people saying to me, oh, I'd rather get like a red hot poker and shove it in my ear. Yes. I'm with you. And then there's the engineer and the accountants in the corner going, oh, no, that seems like rather reasonable video watching to me.
There you go. I stand vindicated.
My fellow train spotters and I all think this is a good video to watch. When I had a quick glance at the new Nikon, 810.
Yeah.
Sounds like a silly number.
Now, given itself, that it's only got 3 digits, I'm assuming it's one of their top-end SLRs.
Yep. Second. Well, it's their equivalent to the Canon like Mark III, sort of that mid-priced.
Right.
35mm sensor camera.
Yep.
But I happened to glance over whilst I was on the DP review site or the deep preview site, whichever you prefer.
Jesus.
I love teasing you. They always have this 10 most viewed cameras section where the rates, you know, percentage-wise, how many people are looking at which cameras.
Yep.
And for the first time ever I looked over, there wasn't a single Canon SLR in the top 10 viewed cameras for the week.
Right.
Now, normally Canon occupy 40% of the top 10.
Right.
And usually the top couple are Canon SLRs.
Okay.
So you can imagine to have not a single one in the top 10 is astounding. It shows that everything they've got out at the moment is so old, effectively, that no one's bothering to look that up.
Right.
Yeah, that's a fair sign, isn't it?
Are Canon getting into the mirrorless arena or not?
Badly, but not. Yeah, they've got the EOS M and the M2 freeway or something.
So were either of those in the top 10?
No, nothing. So they're not a single interchangeable lens camera from Canon.
Right.
Was in the top 10.
Wow.
They had one compact camera, that's it.
Wow.
So, but funnily enough, number one is a Sony.
Okay.
Yeah, the new RX 103.
Right.
Which is 40% of the views of cameras for the week. Yeah, wow. Amazing. 40% of all the views of cameras on that site was that one camera.
Wow.
Mm. Sony actually had two in the top 10. They had the A6000 as well.
Oh, okay.
So,
which I know nothing about.
Back to marketing again, though.
Yeah.
Or the Sony RX 103 is the most premium of pocketable premium enthusiast compacts. It's the most premium of pocketable premium cameras. Of all the premium cameras, this one's the most premium. Yeah. Fabulous. That makes me want to go out and buy it. That's a nice camera you've got there. That's not nice. That's the most premium.
It's like,
gee, you take most premium photos. You have a most premium camera.
It's like all of our cameras are the ultimate, but this one's more ultimate than the others.
This is the most ultimate. So I thought that kind of tickled my fancy. And once again, spent a bit of time on DP Review this week.
Yeah.
I noticed they've got a new DIY forum.
Oh, have they? Okay.
Which I thought was kind of, because we like that kind of people tinkering. It always amazes me what people's ingenuity comes up with.
For sure.
And this one guy, and we have the link in the notes, has got one of the old folding cameras from 100 years ago, and he's mounted a Sony NEX camera on the back as a digital back for it.
Say that again?
The old folding, like the old 620, the old bellows cameras.
Okay, yeah.
It's got one of those oldies.
Yeah.
And mounted a Sony NEX on the back of it as the
capture mechanism.
As the capture mechanism for it.
Right.
And he's going around taking photos of it. Okay. And I've got to tell you, pretty darn good.
Is it?
His macro stuff is excellent.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. That's a neat little hack.
I'll have to look at that one.
Yeah, I thought you would. And then there's another one there who's got this kind of cool little homemade axial lighting device.
Right. Where what do you mean by axial?
Well, it's basically you're shooting through a sheet of glass that's on an angle, right? And so you're doing product photography, but you shoot. Right. It's a flat object. You want to shoot from above. This guy's shooting coins as an example.
Okay.
So he's got this coin laying flat. And he fires the flash at this angled piece of glass, so the light hits it and then bounces straight down.
Yeah.
But you're shooting through the glass, so it looks like the light's coming basically through the lens.
Oh.
So you get this light source that's kind of it's coming from, because you're sort of thinking, well, yeah, it's not a flash, because imagine how high that would be if it's on top of the camera.
Yeah.
It's not a ring flash, because that would give you kind of very flat lighting.
Yeah.
So he's getting these really interesting effects.
Wow.
With a fairly easy and basic little piece of thing to put together.
And that's a really nice shot of that coin.
Oh, it's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
So once again, that was a pretty darn neat little piece of kit, I thought there.
Other than shooting coins, what would be the, use for that?
Oh, no, anything where you want, once again, it depends on how things reflect as to how you want them to light. So I would imagine any small objects that have detail on them, have raised and lowered areas.
Yeah.
If you throw a light from any of the sides, you're going to get shadow effects, which you may not want.
Yep.
So having the light coming from there may eliminate all that. It may look some stuff look two dimensional, but who knows? I'm sure there's a range of stuff that'd be it'd be one of those things that'd be kind of cool to experiment how things look though.
Yeah.
You get all sorts of different objects and you put in, how will it light? Have you seen that? You've seen that the podcast.
Will it blend?
How will it light? There you go. There's a whole new genre of YouTube videos right there.
Awesome.
I want 10% if anyone does it. 10% of your million views, so I expect 100,000 views to one of my things.
Right.
I was watching, speaking of YouTube, just totally off the rack. My daughter wants to, before going to bed, wants to watch this thing called The Duck Song on YouTube.
Okay.
And it's this little crappy animated, really bad, fairly badly sung, little thing about this duck going up to a lemonade stand asking, do you have any grapes? Day after day, It's kind of maddening.
Okay.
So yep. I watched it the second night. I actually paid attention to the screen to see what she's watching.
Right.
And I noted the views this thing's had.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
171 million views.
Oh, my God.
For a little animated duck walking up to a lemonade stand saying, do you have any grapes?
Yeah, Max is the same. Max will sit and watch YouTube. Like, Max won't watch TV. He'll just watch YouTube.
Like, it's like TV, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 171 million views.
That is insane.
Crazy stuff.
And you think of the amount of money they've made off advertising because of that.
Oh, exactly. That's what I was thinking. He's come out with two other versions, funnily enough, and imagine. Yeah.
Right.
He walks into a shop and asks for some grapes. That's a radical change.
Radical departure from the original storyline.
And then, song number three, he goes back to the lemonade stand and drags the guy from there into the shop where the girl who's wouldn't sell him grapes in the shop.
Right.
Fabulous.
Oh, dear.
So, look, you know, I hate puff pieces.
Right.
In the internet, nothing drives me crazy. I'll check out that article and find out it's nothing but just content for the sake of content. It's just fluff.
Yeah.
I came across one.
And most of it's clickbait. Yeah.
Three uses for high ISO you may not have known.
Right.
But okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm prepared to have a look. You've got me.
Yep.
Number one, to use higher shutter speeds.
Really? I would never have thought of increasing my ISO just so that I could get a faster shutter speed.
There you go, isn't it? So you've learned something. That's worthwhile. To photograph the night sky.
Right.
And I thought the big one, to hand hold a big lens.
Okay.
Yep.
So I'm wondering what the author of this article thought was the most common reason for using a higher ISO if it was not one of those three things.
Well, I was inspired by the article. I wrote my own.
Right.
I've got a new article. This is coming out tomorrow. It's going to be published all over the world.
Yep.
The New Yorker's taking it up.
Right.
Three uses for low ISO that you may not have known.
Right.
To use low shutter speeds.
Right.
To photograph a bright sky. And for using ultra-wide angle lenses.
Nice.
Yeah, I know, it's revolutionary, isn't it?
It is. That's cutting edge,
yeah,
mate.
Sometimes you get those little flashes of inspiration. He's just like you work like a feverish demon at the keyboard.
You can't get it down quick enough because I've got to get this out before I lose it.
And I got it. I got it all. It's all there. Well, yeah.
It's gold, mate. Gold.
It's like all my stuff. I've got the heading.
Gold for lavender.
It's like my gay porn movie I wrote. I didn't actually write the movie, but I've got the title. And that's half the battle right there.
And
so that's my new article. So forget about the puff pieces. That's just madness, madness, madness. And then I came across a new app today.
Yeah.
It was $20.
Jesus.
Which is an expensive app. So I made my mate Dave Oakley download it and pay for it instead of me.
Right.
So he could tell me if it's any good or not. Great idea, wasn't it?
And was it good?
Well, what it is, it's an iPad screen extension for Photoshop.
A screen extension.
So basically, it's showing what's on your iPad. What have you got on Photoshop is showing on your screen on your iPad.
Okay.
So it's a screen doubler, you know, or whatever it's basically for. So it shows your desktop screen from certain apps.
Right.
On and then you can use a pressure sensitive pen on the iPad and draw into Photoshop or any of the other drawing programs. And it'll show up on your main screen.
Oh, so your iPad becomes your Wacom tablet.
Tablet, exactly.
Okay, so I'm guessing, obviously it's an iOS app, so I can't use it because I don't have any iOS devices and I haven't seen it, but I'm guessing that the way this would work is that you need to be on a Wi-Fi network.
I would imagine.
Because you need to have the app logged into your desktop PC in order to share the screen.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
No, I agree. Yeah. No, I concur. I think you've nailed it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Cool.
And this is no puff piece. This is spot on. Yeah. But it's kind of good because David is a phenomenal digital painter.
Oh, he is.
And so I thought, well, and he's looking at getting one of these Wacom tablets,
yep,
which are thousands of dollars.
Right.
This sucker's
Is he looking for the big 21-inch?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And this sucker's 20 bucks. You know, to do. And he's already got the pens because he does all this stuff already. So I thought he'd be the perfect guinea pig to test it on.
So has he given it a whirl?
Well, he's given it a bit of a whirl. He only sent it through this afternoon. But he says, I just got the app. I have the Jot Styles, whatever that means.
Right.
So it seems an interesting option. Now, I've got to point out straight away, this is a scary thing to be reading one of Dave's emails.
Right.
Because he can't write because of his brain injury. He does struggle to actually put words in a coherent sentence.
Yep.
So I have the Jot Styles. May not actually mean anything to do with Jot stuff. It could be something completely different.
Right.
Yeah. So don't, if you're looking for Jot Styles and yours and you don't have it, that may not be a big issue.
Yeah.
I just did the install and set up. It just did, which is good.
Right.
I moved Photoshop on my iPad and it's okay. Not great though. Bit of lagging.
Right.
I think I have to set it up better. Haha, new apps.
Well, that could just be a Wi-Fi issue though.
Yeah, and I'm thinking we might just put that email up as a review.
Right.
At least I know. Yeah, it's a bit of clickbait. Yeah, but we'll put it up there and see if we can get 107 million viewers. But yeah, so it's interesting. There's a bit of lag there. And I don't know if that means there's lag from when you're drawing to when it's showing on the screen. And it may also become part of just what you get used to. Do you need to be looking at the big screen as well? Or are you looking at the iPad, therefore the lag's not an issue? You know what I mean? If you're drawing something on the iPad and wanted to see what it looks like on the big screen, that you can understand there'd probably be a lag.
I would imagine that the lag that he's referring to is that, as you draw on the iPad, you don't see the brush stroke appearing in real time. There's probably like a half second delay there.
Yeah, if that's on the iPad having that half a second delay, that'd be a nightmare.
It would,
yeah.
Because you think about it, it's got to take
invisible ink.
It's got to take that pressure sensitive signal from the screen of the iPad, transmit it over Wi-Fi to your desktop machine to Photoshop, and tell Photoshop, I'm sending you these coordinates to map a brush stroke. Photoshop's then got to do the maths to, you know, put that brush stroke down with the relevant brush size, sensitivity, fade, all those variables that come into that, and then transmit that information back over the Wi-Fi network to the iPad and display it on the screen. So there's got to be a bit of a time delay there.
And it could be one of those things you get used to, or if it's half a second, it could be drive you crazy, as you say. But it's interesting, and if people are out there are thinking about experimenting with that sort of stuff, $20 is not a bad.
And as you say, $20 versus $1,500 for the monitor, or $2,000 or whatever it is. So
yeah,
yeah.
Now I was trawling through the crowdsourcing sites today, looking. I was home all day with a horrible sinus headache migraine.
Right.
So I was kind of a bit miserable all day.
Sounds like a bucket load of fun.
It was not a joyful day at all. So I'm just trying to keep myself focused on doing a few little things that didn't require too much brain activity, but also didn't let me sit there thinking, oh, my head, oh, yeah, being the typical man, So I came across this bunch of stuff on Indiegogo and a few other ones where all these photographers, and I've just called it basically the upgrade my gear section of crowdsourcing.
Right.
Oh, I want a new camera, so I'll crowdsource it.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
I want this. I want that. I need a new. Oh, my computer's going a bit slow. I'll crowdsource one. Yeah, this one here calls One Too Many Blue Screens is the heading of the Indiegogo project.
Right.
I want to do more with my photography, but my computer's driving me a bit crazy. So I want you to buy me a new computer.
My goodness.
I know.
I can't believe people actually put money into this.
And then this one guy, my camera. I was doing some time lapse photography, my camera fell off a cliff. help me buy a new one. Help me.
What?
Help me buy a new one. He's only got $608, that guy. Yeah.
That is insane. That is crazy.
I know.
This kind of stuff is what is going to be the death of things like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, because people will just get tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll go, well, there's no innovation being offered here anymore. It's not worth my time to come and look at the new projects, you know.
Oh, no, you could go to the Time to Go Full Frame, the Indiegogo one. help me raise money for a new camera one. It'll be another fascinating one. But here's a great thing. I found the same people on multiple sites.
Oh, you are kidding.
Yeah.
That's shonky.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though, as well. This is part of the issue with a lot of newbies to photography who don't charge enough money.
Yeah.
To cover themselves. That's why photography is expensive. If your camera falls off a cliff,
yeah,
you're charging enough of your work, or you're charging enough that you can afford the insurance,
yeah,
to have it covered, and you're not in this position where you need to crowdsource and hope someone will give you some money.
Yeah.
But these people who go out and I've got a full-time job, therefore I can do photography cheap, I don't need it to give me any money. They're doing a disservice to the industry, but doing a disservice to themselves because, yeah, they're getting this in situations. They can't replace the gear.
Yeah.
And funny enough, the money from the full-time job helped pay the family's way.
Mm.
The family, you know, it's just, that's the problem. If you want to do this stuff, I'd support anyone who wants to get out in photography. Support absolutely anyone as long as they're charging enough to make themselves viable.
Yeah.
Photography is a business, not an art form. If you want to be a photographer, it's a business, not an art.
Yeah.
You know, you can't run it like an artist would run. That's why one of my wonderful friends in life is a phenomenal artist.
Right.
I've been watching it for the last, 28 years.
Right.
And her style is getting better and better. And the stuff she's doing right now is just phenomenal. It's just wow. Right. She's an amazing waitress too.
Right.
She's a great waitress.
Okay.
Yeah, she's worked waitressing for the last 28 years.
Yeah.
Because that's what she does to pay her living to be able to afford to do her art.
Right.
Because there's no money.
What is her art? Is it painting or?
She does all sorts of, she paints, she draws. It's kind of hard to describe. I'm going to. Her Facebook profile is she's a self-employed artist, which is which is kind of funny. I'm going to send you a link as we speak to what her current work in progress.
So, sounds like she's old school multimedia.
Yeah, she does hand, but she sews into her paintwork. She does multiple different types of art forms in the one piece. At the moment, she's currently pinholing the work. With a really sharp, pointy little like a needle, and right. Putting holes and patterns in the work with the holes.
Right. You know? That link you just sent me, I got a. This content is currently not available.
Page. Really?
Yeah.
Really.
So,
what are you doing in the wrong way then?
Maybe she doesn't share all of her images with people who aren't contacts.
Right. I'll just cut and paste off her. Off her. There's a million ways around this so-called protection content and stuff.
We'll take your word for it anyway.
No. I'm just going to copy and steal it. Yeah. How do we Skype contacts? How do you send something on? send files. There we go. So it's done. I'm just a tech guru tonight.
Here it comes. Save as. Okay.
137K, dude, on your national broadband
Chuck
network.
That on my desktop.
It may take a bit of time for you to get it.
There it is. Let's open it up. Whoa. Wow.
Pretty darn interesting stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Remarkable talent and incredible depth.
Well, in the interest of keeping internet piracy alive and well, I'll publish this photo in the show notes.
And if anyone wants to buy her work, so she doesn't have to be a waitress, get in touch with me and I'll put you in touch with her.
Awesome.
Because she's
Does she have a website? Does she exhibit this stuff?
She does exhibit around the world.
Right.
Her name is Simone Maynard, for anyone of interest who wants to go and find out more about her.
Okay.
I don't know if she's actually got a... An actual, she's got a Facebook page.
I mean, she must have, she must be on something like Redbubble or one of those.
Oh, she's on Redbubble. She is on Redbubble, absolutely. I saw that the other day. She put something up. In fact, there it is on her page there right now about her Redbubble stuff.
Flick me the link for that and we'll put that in the show notes as well.
Support a struggling artist.
Yeah.
I only get 20% of everything, so it's not much.
Yeah, don't be a scumbag and steal her photos like Glyn would do.
I'm the proud owner of two of her works of art, I must say.
Oh, cool.
One of her very early stuff from 28 years ago.
Oh, right.
Worth nothing. If she makes a fortune, everyone's like, that doesn't look anything like her work. It's worth nothing.
Because she's moved forward a bit.
She's moved a long way. But seriously cool. So, yeah.
But that image you've sent through, that's just, wow.
Yeah, I said I'm always jealous of people who've got talent. Yeah. So. Yeah. So,
speaking of which,
I haven't finished me crowdsourcing abuse yet.
Okay.
Keep that under your hat because that sounds good.
Yeah, it was a good link, but you just killed it. So yeah, you talk about your crowdsourcing. So
this is a segue. I'll talk about segues. We can talk about that. Okay. Yeah. But there's this one group that actually run. This got me on about running a business. This one group, they're running a business as photographers and videographers.
Right.
And they want you to buy the gear for them.
What?
They actually mustn't have any or much at the moment. Also, one of their cameras died, so therefore they've only got one basic camera left. So, and if you buy the gear for them, the crowdsource, you get to use their services at a discounted rate.
What?
Which I thought was kind of interesting, isn't it?
What I
had to be my favorite.
Yeah.
As this guy who's, over the years, buying old cameras in op shops and stuff.
Right.
Occasionally he finds cameras that have got rolls of film in them. And over the years, he's collected 22 rolls of film.
Yeah.
He wants to crowdsource for someone to help pay for developing and printing those rolls.
Really?
Yep.
Does it really cost that much to develop a roll of film?
Oh, I wouldn't have thought so. Couldn't cost you more than $300 the lot, you wouldn't imagine, but yeah. Still. He's doing it. So inspired. I've had an inspiring day. It's inspired me to crowdsource.
You've come up with some good crowdsourcing ideas, haven't you?
I've got a project, a new project I want to start.
Right.
And I thought, I need funding to make it possible.
Okay.
And at the end, but I'm not like these guys.
Yeah.
Who are just putting out like nothing at the end. Oh, you're buying me my gear to use my service. No, I'm going to put out an art book at the end of it.
Okay.
A book that every backer over a certain value will get a limited edition signed copy of the book. So they're actually getting some.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. So what it is, I've got a project. It's a 12-month project. It might go 2 or 3 years, though. It's the only problem. It may extend.
Right.
And I call it photographing the maid, the cook, and the gardener in their natural
environments.
Repose. Yeah. In my house.
Right.
What I want is to crowdsource me a cook, a gardener, and a maid for to clean the house, cook me meals, and do the garden.
Right.
And watch the cars, not forget the cars.
And you'll photograph them and turn it into a book. Them,
and the best shots over, say, the half a decade or possibly the full decade that we do this project, at the end of the 20 years, we're going to put out the book.
You just do a different. You do a new volume each year. You go volume one, and then the next year you do volume two.
Get new ones.
Yeah.
Oh, then we can have like the home tutor, the guitar teacher. We can really expand the show, the pilots. Get me a plane, people. Get me a plane. So there. What do you think? Has it got legs? Do you reckon?
Definitely. Definitely.
If you get 22 rolls of film up and going, I reckon it could get me a maid for a year.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable. You know what? I'd also really like to have someone to crowdsource.
What's that?
A trainer.
Like not a personal trainer.
Oh. I want someone who's going to train me how to ride a Segway.
Right.
So I told you to get back with Segway.
Yeah. I can't even remember what the Segway was now. What were you talking about?
Then we'd finished, hadn't we?
What was it we were talking about? Oh, about talented people.
Yes. I hate talented people.
Last week you brought to our attention Brian Horton.
Mm.
And I hope everyone who heard last week's episode went and checked out Brian's work because it really is amazing stuff. What took that whole story up a notch for me was that Brian responded to last week's podcast by posting on the Shutters Inc. Facebook.
Yes, we'd like to apologise for everything we said, and we'll take down all references to him and hope that will make the lawsuit go away.
Yes. And so, you know, he was thankful for Glenn having brought to everyone's attention, his portfolio of work. It turns out Brian is a paraplegic. Now, that just, you know, to me, that just takes it to a whole other level because, you know, I have an uncle who's a paraplegic, and I know how, I'm not suggesting that.
Careful.
I'm trying to think of the way to word it. I'm not suggesting that he's incapable of doing anything because he's in a wheelchair, but I know that that adds a level of complexity to moving around.
Yeah.
And as a photographer, as as we all know, composition is, you know, just as vital to the shot as, you know, the lighting and the, you know, the model's pose and the props and all of those things. You know, composition is just as big a part of it as everything else. And composition is not only the bits that are inside the frame, but it's the position from which you shoot.
Absolutely. Lens choice, angles, or the perspective.
Yeah, and so when you take into account that someone is now restricted to being in a wheelchair, you know, that, like I said, that adds a layer of complexity.
But, you know, I don't know if I don't want to say it helps, but it would certainly it would slow you down somewhat.
Oh, for sure.
And that can only be a good thing in photography, as we say all the time, taking your time to craft the shot.
Yep.
To compose it within an inch of its life.
Yeah.
Requires time.
Yeah.
Requires definitely. A study. And you know, he spends a lot of time getting his stage set just so.
Yeah.
A lot of time getting his light. He's not looking for 100 images from a shoot. He's looking for one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his one or two are killer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did notice, I didn't mention last week that I looking through his past Flickr stuff that he'd come along through things like Strobus meetups where people meet together and learn off camera flash and all this kind of stuff. And I noticed his progression was through sharing with other photographers. And it really just once again proves that, you know, if you can get out there and don't do this by yourself, get out there and find other groups to be
collaborate.
Involved in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll raise everybody. So,
I liked the comment that he said, I knew what I wanted, just never knew where to get the bits. So I did a Google search for theatre suppliers.
Theatre suppliers, yes.
From that, I found an eventing and theatre supplier. They were more than happy for me to turn up, rummage through their stock, and offer a little bit of cash to borrow a carload of kit. I thought, what a great idea.
Hey, do you know how much that cost over here?
No.
And more than a slip of bit of cash and a car. I mean, I hired a Tommy gun from one of these places once. It cost me like $80.
Ouch.
For one prop.
Wow.
You know, it was a real Tommy gun.
Yeah.
Disabled, but either way, that stuff can get pretty darn X-y.
Yeah.
You know? The reason I don't do the May the 4th Be With You Star Wars workshops anymore.
Yep.
Was it cost me like $400 in costuming.
Right.
For one night hire.
You know, it'd almost be cheaper to buy that stuff and keep it.
Eventually, yeah. I mean, if you're doing them often enough, but for something that happens once a year,
yeah,
it's going to run a fair few of those to make it worth the while. So, so that's the stuff here. Unfortunately, can be very expensive. He's got onto a good organization there who can help him out.
Which is awesome.
But yeah, definitely props is.
It made me think, like, certainly here in Gosford, there's a musical society who do, you know, stage productions.
Of course.
And I was thinking I should maybe go and check them out and see whether or not they have, you know, a bunch of props and whether or not
any
they
amateur
hire them theater out.
Is a good idea as well. Amateur theater rather than full on prop organizations, but amateur theater groups.
Yeah.
Offer your services to come and do a photograph a show for them or something in return for using some gear.
Yeah.
Like it. Nice.
So thank you, Brian. Really appreciated the comments and
go and buy his book. He's got a book, a limited edition book, Man Cave 1.
Right.
Volume 1, the first 6 months in his new studio, and it's available from Blurb, I think it is, from memory.
He didn't send us a link for that, did he?
It's on his photo box gallery page from memory.
Oh, okay. That link was in last week's show notes.
Yeah. So if you love some fine art nudes and want to be able to study them, grab the book. There. I've only got one last thing, dude.
Right.
Because once again,
I have
Indiegogo,
one other thing.
Kickstarter. Yep. This time, not Indiegogo. Lomo, the Lomo people's instant Lomography cameras comes to an end in about 16 hours. Their project.
Which means it'll all be over by the time this comes out.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's pretty exciting. So it runs on the Fuji Instax instant Fuji film.
Right.
But it's variable lenses. It's got, you know, wide angle lens. It's got portrait lens. It's got some other lens, ultra wide angle or something, maybe, I don't know. But it's got, effectively, you can pop on these other lenses and it gives you this Lomo, you know, retro feel on instant photos.
Right.
Which is pretty darn cool. So if you like your little Polaroid type cameras, this thing could rock your world. They wanted $100,000. That was their goal.
I'm just looking at the numbers.
$1,066,000. They're doing okay for themselves. 22 hours to go. There you go.
That is awesome.
And the cameras look pretty darn cool. I gotta say. The cameras look pretty funky.
But 10 times what they were chasing in funding.
Pretty cool, hey?
That's crazy.
So much, much fun, I'm sure, for those people who are into all that sort of instant stuff. So it's got a built-in wide angle plus a fisheye and a portrait attachment. So this will obviously just clip-on lenses.
Right.
But kind of cool, kind of fun if you're into that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
right. And that's a pretty darn cool-looking little camera too. So,
well, one more thing that I've got on my list was a Vimeo video that I came across this week, which is just another one of these beautifully shot 4K nature time-lapse type videos set to music, and it's a fluff piece for you to look at.
Yeah,
because I know how much you love them.
You know, here's the problem.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get burnt out by this stuff.
Right.
This phenomenal video, incredible time-lapse, great done stuff.
Yep.
I don't know.
Overloaded.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever seen the video Baraka?
No, I don't think I have.
B-A-R-A-K-A. It's kind of one of the first guys doing this sort of
A-K-A.
It's a phenomenal video. It's, I don't know, it's got to be 20 years old.
Yeah, 1992.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 22 years old. Phenomenal, amazing footage of this guy just going around the world shooting incredible footage.
I was just about to ask, is this related to Kyanaskotsi? The film is often compared to Kyanaskotsi, the first of the Kotsi films by Godfrey Reggio, for which Frick was cinematographer. Ah, there you go.
Just incredible stuff. So I've been seeing this because I've seen all that series for the last 20 odd years.
Yeah.
So whilst I love this stuff, it's just phenomenal and amazing and so on. It's also like, well, you know, you know, but it loses some of the wow factor because it's just another great, amazing clip. Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you were sleeping with supermodels, you know, night after night after night. One of my favorite billboards I ever saw was a picture of this big supermodel lazing on a couch, and the headline was, "Somewhere in the world, someone's tired of sleeping with this woman." Yeah, it's like, you know, you should see so much beauty for so long. It's like if you buy a beach house.
You become jaded.
Do you sit out and look at the view?
No. That's right.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Are we getting that way? How more amazing do we have to get before we start getting the wow factor back again?
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's the thing. Yeah, we might get 4K and then 8K and 16K and 32K video, but, you know, I don't know. Who knows?
So the final thing that we had on the list was one that Adam Davidson posted on the Facebook wall to an article on DIY photography, The Harsh Truth About the Connection Between the Cost of Your Gear and Your Value as a Photographer. Now, Glenn, I'm assuming you've read this?
No.
Right. Well, that makes two of us.
So. I think it's mostly a fluff piece.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, we're at a bit of a loss to discuss it. I'll have a quick read. Posts that illustrate the cost of running a photography business and deriving an hourly or a daily rate from it are becoming somewhat of a standard. Those posts make a strong connection between the cost of doing business, renting a place, buying a camera, and so on. You just crowdsource that stuff now.
Yeah.
And the fees that a photographer needs to charge. The team over at Salesographer makes what I think is a very true statement about the fact that the money you charge should have nothing to do with how much it actually costs to produce a shoot. It has everything to do with the value you bring to the table. They actually go right against those cost-sharing posts and say that Every time you share a list of business expenses to justify your price, you tell the world that you don't take yourself seriously as a business owner and that they shouldn't either. Your value is not derived from the costs that it takes to produce the work you produce. Your value is derived from the work you produce and the service you provide and the fact that you're the only one who can do what you do, period. For me, that makes total sense, as creatives are not in the market for selling a commodity where the price is cut as a percentage of the cost. They sell a premium service. That said, the cost of doing business should definitely be something you're aware of just to make sure you can keep running a business. Both Don Giannatti and a photo editor, there's a couple of links there, have some great tips on bidding and quoting.
Yeah. So, yes, you can't say, oh, it costs me this much to do business, therefore this is the price. That's madness. Yeah. But if you have no idea what it costs you to do business, that's even more madness.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just, if you don't know what it, once again, if you don't know what it costs to do business, you'll be on crowdsourcing looking for someone to upgrade your next camera.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, to pay for your trip to go somewhere to take the photographs that you need to be able to take photos for a client or whatever it is.
Yeah,
because you've got no idea what it's actually cost to do the business.
That's right.
So you've got to have your head around all that sort of stuff.
Definitely.
But you know, it's like, you know, you print an 8x10 out for a person. Well, you're not charging what it costs to produce the piece of paper.
No.
Yeah, that's not that's only a very small intangible part, but you then got to put all your cost of business on top of that and then what you think your art is worth on top of that again.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether it's double, triple, quadruple, tenfold, 1,000-fold, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in the 70s, Michael Warshall, Australia's richest photographer, used to charge $400 for an 8x10 when everyone else was like $20.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was 20 times more expensive than anybody else, not because his paper cost any more. Yeah.
Only but just because he put a value on what he provided.
He wanted to be the most expensive.
Right.
Pure and simple. And he wanted to be outrageously so.
Right.
That's why he buys a new Lamborghini every 18 months.
Bit like Peter Lick.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Same concept. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So yeah, that's you can't value your work based on how much gear you spent or what it cost you to learn the skills. But you've got to be aware of every single thing, every cost, because if you're not, that's how you'll go out of business. Doesn't matter how talented and how you're the only one in the world that can do this. Well, you won't be if you had to sell all your camera gear off to pay your debts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The one thing I do agree with, like the sentiment in that post, is that it can't be purely a, this is the cost of doing business, therefore this is the cost of the product, because the moment you commoditize it like that, then it just becomes a race to the bottom between you and the next photographer.
Well, yeah, so it's but remember, everyone's cost of doing business is different as well. This is why I said before, when someone has a full-time job doing something else that pays for their life and they call themselves a photographer and go out and do cut-price work, well, that's
not doing business.
That's just getting paid for your hobby. Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to feed your family as a photographer. You have to be able to pay all your bills. You've got to be able to do all, and you're going to have a life.
Yeah, and I'll confess, that's kind of where I'm at.
Absolutely. I'm not trying to denigrate anybody who does that. And what denigrate means to those people is that I'm not trying to speak down to you. No, I heard that during the week. I said, I would never denigrate anyone who listens to country music. And what I mean by denigrate is, everyone's on the journey. Everyone's saying, well, look, I've got to still feed my family, but I want to explore this.
Yeah.
Totally, absolute, 100%.
Yeah.
But don't justify your cheap pricing because, I don't need the money because my other job pays for it.
Yeah.
Run that part of your business as in, well, you know, what if I wanted to do this?
Yeah.
Am I starting myself off in the right way by being able to charge that sort of price? Am I worth that sort of price? If this developed and went beyond where I thought it was going to be, would this be a sustainable business? And we get this all the time. People start doing the odd job here, the odd job there. Then they get more and more requests and more. And this is how a lot of people get into photography as photographers.
Yeah.
They get enough requests, they think they can do it full time.
Yeah.
But they forget that as soon as they lose their 9-to-5 job,
yeah,
they can no longer.
They lost the crutch that was holding them up.
Exactly. And they can no longer keep going. So, anyway.
Yeah. All right, mate. Good to talk to you again.
We went a bit overtime, dude.
We did. I don't know what happened to the half price, half content episode.
We have to charge 25% more than last week's episode.
All right. Well, you have a good week.
I will indeed. And I'll talk soon.
When this episode comes out, there will have already been 3 days of photos of my new motorbike on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll have all caught up with the story even before you've heard the podcast. So, yes.
Good stuff.
Give you a review of it next week.
Good stuff.
Okay. All right, mate. Have a good weekend. See you, mate.
See ya. Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.